The Jewish people are often likened to one body in classical and Hasidic sources. That body is hemorrhaging right now and has undergone trauma not seen since the Shoah. As everyone knows, on one of the holiest days on the Jewish calendar this past Saturday, hundreds, if not over 1,000 Hamas terrorists and Gazans penetrated the border and massacred hundreds of innocent Israelis, women, children, soldiers and police, as well as abducting over 130 people into the Gaza Strip, numbers that are utterly staggering and difficult to digest. A modern-day pogrom, the likes of which we have not seen since the Holocaust, pogroms, one of the very reasons Israel was founded to prevent. It was an attack that caught the Israeli military, intelligence, and political echelons incomprehensibly and utterly surprised, and took many, many hours for the army and security forces to recover, as well as days to retake the invaded villages of the south. These crimes against humanity constitute the worst tragedy to ever befall Israel, and this is likely just the beginning. As we record this episode on October 10th, 2023, Israel has declared war and has vowed to exact a heavy price for these unprovoked war crimes. Whether this is toppling Hamas, a ground invasion, retaking the Gaza Strip, no one knows, and it may take several weeks of brutal war as hundreds of rockets continue to rain down on Israeli civilians. Lots of questions remain unanswered as we continue to understand the scale of this catastrophe. Lots of blame will be assigned, but this is not the time for that. This is the time for unity, and over the coming weeks, we will have many opportunities to come together as a community, express solidarity, and show our love and support for Israel. Welcome to Seeking Sinai. I'm Rabbi Natan. As you can see, we have pivoted and taken a break from our normal episodes of Jewish Journeys. We actually had just recorded one this past Friday, hours before news from Israel arrived, and we'll share that one in the coming months. But we're here today with Yoav Zilber, a dear Israeli-American congregant and the former Atlanta chair of the Israeli-American Council, working on building bridges between Israel, Israeli-American, and Jewish-American communities. Yoav and I are not here to analyze or prognosticate strategies or policies. We'll leave that to the pundits and talking heads. We are here to answer a few questions, process some of the events, and talk about things that we can do. Yoav, welcome. I wish you were here under different circumstances.
Thank you.
First, tell us about your family and friends in Israel. How are they? Where are they?
Well, they and we all are feeling sad, angry, frustrated, shocked, in disbelief. I think that these are some of the emotions that we all feel these days. With that, my family luckily is okay. My immediate family, my father, my sisters are all doing well. My older sister is a doctor, so she's very busy at the hospital. She's at the Sheba Medical Center. But besides those sadness and anger, they're doing okay, thank you.
When people ask me how my Israeli family or friends are doing, I say, bodily speaking, they're fine, but we're all broken.
We are, yeah.
Everyone is broken. What about you? Where are you from in Israel? What brought you to Atlanta? Just a little bit about your background.
Okay, so I was born in Rehovot, which is about 30 kilometers, 20 miles outside of Tel Aviv, where the Weizmann Institute is. So that's where what it's known for. Grew up there, went to the military, then moved to Tel Aviv as many young Israelis and spent the next 10, 12 years there, went to school and started my career there. And then I found myself working in developing countries in Africa, and I met my spouse, Catherine, and we ended up moving to the U.S. when that chapter ended about 10, 11 years ago.
And Atlanta?
Well, she's from the southeast. I needed a major airport because I travel a lot, so Atlanta was the natural choice.
The images, as we all know, are unprecedented. Horrible atrocities perpetrated against hundreds of innocent civilians. 260 bodies retrieved from the music festival in a kibbutz outside of Gaza. 40 babies just confirmed murdered in their cribs. Families in their beds. Israelis have never experienced this level of terrorist monstrosity. I'm curious, how are normal people dealing with this immense trauma, all the while preparing for what comes next. We know that a major war is brewing.
October 7th, the day of Simchat Torah of this year, will be remembered as probably the worst day in Jewish and Israeli history, maybe since the Holocaust. Now, just to give some perspective, I usually try to avoid making number comparisons because every life is olam umlo'o, is a world, a full world, a world of its own. But, you know, this event has been dubbed as the 9/11 of Israel. I just want to give a quick understanding here of the magnitude. The U.S. is 36 times the population of Israel. The U.S. population is 36 times the one of Israel. We have about 1,000 people dead right now. So that would mean 30,000 people in the U.S. Proportionally. 9/11 was just shy of 3,000. So we're talking about 12 times the magnitude of 9/11 proportionally. So this is something that we cannot grasp. No one can understand. We're all in shock, as I said, and I think that the mental health of the people is in different stages across the board. So it depends on how close you are to the events or to families, or whether you had your own family members who are dead, who are wounded, who are missing. I cannot even start to think about being a father, and I'm a father myself. Thinking of my children being on the other side, abducted by these murderous terrorists. So I think that the people who are on different level of the mental health, I'm not a mental health professional, but, you know, are coping with this differently. What I think that we start to see is that people will stay busy, those military forces, security forces, those volunteers, and we will probably talk about this later in the podcast, are able to keep a routine and maybe push it a little bit forward. But I think that as we move forward, we're going to see a massive outbreak of post-trauma in Israel, trauma and post-trauma in Israel.
There's going to be life before October 7th, 2023, and life after. This is one of those seminal moments.
Definitely.
Everyone's going to remember. I also have a five-year-old and a two-year-old, and I do the same exact thing as every parent does. We were just talking about it, like placing ourselves in that same situation. On one hand, we say we can't do that, it's not fair, and yet on the other hand, how can we not do that?
Right.
How can we not place ourselves in that situation? I think a lot of people are just confused and utterly bewildered as to how hundreds of Gazan terrorists, up to 1,000, if not more, infiltrated one of the most guarded, technologically advanced borders in the world with the technology of the IDF. Can you briefly, and again briefly, because this is not the scope of this episode, help us understand that?
So I just referenced 9/11. I think that the second reference that was given to the events that happened on Saturday are the Yom Kippur. And interestingly enough, it came 50 years and one day after the Yom Kippur War. During the Yom Kippur War, there were two major failures. One is the intelligence failure, and the other one is the conceptia, as we say in Hebrew, the conception, the line of reasoning. We thought at that time that after the 67 war, the 6 days war, the Arabs were not interested in a war, they were deterred, and they would not start a war. I think that the same thing happened here. We thought that the IDF, with its 8,200 units and other highly technological intelligence units, knew exactly what was happening on the other side. And also we thought that Hamas was not interested in a war at this time. They were receiving money through the Qataris. A couple of weeks ago, received another 20,000, received passes for another 20,000
I mean, this
laborers.
Just happened. We negotiated more permits,
right, exactly,
for Gazans to come into Israel.
Exactly.
We thought they were interested in just...
So there was this concept that they were deterred and they were not interested in a conflict right now because things were getting better for them. But this has collapsed. Apparently it was a facade. And they were using this to prepare an attack. So we don't know exactly what happened there. We start to get bits of information or speculations. But we're fighting now, so we cannot do a thorough review or investigation, but I'm sure that once we'll put the guns down, there will be a very, very thorough study and conclusion making process out of this, and we'll understand better what happened.
Yeah, one thing's for sure, we underestimated who was at our southern border. We underestimated who was in Gaza. We thought they were interested in humanitarian gestures, and it turns out they were interested in what they said in right. their charter, which is
yeah.
the destruction of Israel. And somehow they schooled us in terms of learning exactly how the IDF functions, what they have to take out in terms of cameras, and right. so that we couldn't communicate with each other. And
yeah,
then,
I didn't want to get into the technical details of what happened there, but just to give the framework, we can speak for hours about this. I've been glued to the medias for the past, since Saturday morning, so I heard almost everything that has to be said about this. I read tons of reviews, so I have my own views,
yeah.
but maybe in later podcasts
we'll digest that. Absolutely.
So we've
seen in the past 8 or 9 months that the Israeli-American community has really mobilized in order to face unprecedented events in Israel, not dealing with this, obviously, but dealing with the judicial overhaul, the judicial reforms. I'm wondering, since that was really the first time that we've seen the Israeli-American diaspora really surface with a very strong voice, is that same infrastructure being used to respond to this war and the evolving needs?
So, yeah, definitely. These events find Israel probably in its worst social crisis since its inception, which has to do with this proposed judicial reform, and we spoke about that. And just a few days ago, was it Friday?
It was on Friday.
Friday,
that we met
right?
To discuss
just
this.
Just the day before, we discussed this under the sukkah, and it's true. We have a number of groups that came together in the U.S., Israelis in the U.S., and also Israelis in Israel, to fight that. And it was amazing to see how within hours those groups use their platforms, their mailing lists, their WhatsApp groups to start being active on the different fronts. So volunteers for people, maybe Israelis who were stuck here and were not able to fly back to Israel, and offered their home for them. Fundraising, media. Media is going to be a major, major front that we're going to have to battle these weeks and months ahead, and to try to get hold of the narrative. We use these to, and all these platforms and social media platforms through these groups to start propagate our view, our narrative of what's really happening there, knowing that we are on the right side. So it's been amazing to see how before the end of the day on Saturday, it was already happening. And the same also happened in Israel, even more so in Israel. You know, the organization Achim LaNeshek, Brother in Arms, they set up a huge platform that is today volunteering and getting food and shelter and clothes and necessities and toiletries to everyone in need, and housing to those people from the Gaza envelope who lost their homes. They put them together with people who have Airbnb homes or hotel owners or just people who have room in their houses and are receiving them. So. And it happened within hours, so it's beautiful to see how
it's amazing.
This has shifted and so quickly.
Yeah, the images are heartwarming of Israelis putting aside their differences and coming together, bringing food and everything to soldiers and to civilians in need. I like how you talked about the social media as a front in and of itself. A lot of the fighting, so to speak, is going to happen. Which brings me to my next question, because, you know, it seems like now Israel has a lot of credit, so to speak, given the atrocities, given the images and the videos coming out. Everyone knows that Israel was brutally attacked. But we know from past experiences that once Israel does respond, and once they either invade the Gaza Strip or once the real war starts, that support might be eroded significantly, and we're going to get that D word, which is disproportionate.
Right.
How do we best respond to those allegations of disproportionate use of force?
So it's true that the pictures we saw out of this Saturday were the most difficult we've ever seen. Kidnapped children, naked bodies, massacred, people dragged through the streets, and I don't want even to go further than this. And with that, I think that at this point of time, it brought the world, at least part of the world, the Western world, led by the US, but also European countries, to understand that this time it's different. This time there's no two sides, there's no yes, but there is another side. There is a good side and there is an evil side. And I think that many of those countries reached to the realization that Israel has the right, not only the right, but the obligation this time to go all the way in and terminate the Hamas.
And you think they'll stick with us even after we respond harshly?
I'm talking about what's happening now. Now, what will happen in a week, in 2 weeks, in 3 weeks, still a question mark. And this is where we come back to what we just spoke about,
what
the media, what we can do, the media, the narrative, controlling the narrative. And I think that it'll be very important for everyone who is concerned about Israel, who is concerned about the situation, who has Israel at their heart, to be active on their social medias, with their charities supporting Israel, to make sure that the word is spread and we control the narrative as much as we can, and we fight that. This is a fight that each and every one of us can do.
One thing that's been particularly devastating, apart from the images and what actually happened, is the support that Hamas is getting from many rallies across the world, many awful voices claiming that Hamas's attack was a natural response to the quote-unquote occupation or Israeli policies toward Gaza and Palestinians. How do you respond to that?
So first of all, I think that these events were able to shift some people who were either on the sidelines or tend to be, you know, more balanced or pro-Palestinian, but like pro-Palestinians. Unfortunately, some people will always hate Jews and Israelis. And no matter what we do and no matter how right we are, they just don't want to see us. It was like this for many centuries. We always had people fighting us. We always had the anti-Semitism was always there. And unfortunately, it will stay like this. So, you know, it's those people who couldn't bother enough about hundreds of thousands of Syrians getting butchered by their own president, or Yemenis getting butchered in this fighting that happened there, even though they are their Muslim brothers. But at the same time, they could, you know, cry foul for every one or two Palestinian terrorists that we strike down. So you understand that there's no reasoning with these people. You cannot argue with them. I wouldn't bother arguing with them.
Yeah.
Just trying to block them as much as we can from contaminating the rest of the population or the media or the public knowledge.
Yeah, anti-Zionism has become the new anti-Semitism, the world's oldest and most versatile virus. I think so many people are asking, you know, what can we do? How can we help? What's the best way to contribute our time, our treasure, any resources? Like, what? I know people have different ideas about what we can do. What's your take on this?
There's a lot we can do. First of all, resources. Israel and Israel organizations need support. Friends of IDF through the IAC, which I'm still involved with, the Federation, other organizations, go out. Hospitals, friends of Sheba, friends of Barzilai, friends of Soroka. These are the major hospitals who are treating the people out there. The donation not only gives financial support, but it also gives moral support. It shows the Israeli people that the Jewish community in the U.S. is behind Israel, is supporting Israel, is there for them. So that is one thing. The other thing is rallies. We're speaking today. Today is October the 10th. I don't know when it's going to be aired, but from here, we're all going to meet in Sandy Springs for a support rally for Israel. I'm sure that as the war goes on, we'll have more of these rallies. It's important that more people come there to show support and, you know, not to show that we're not sitting on the sidelines, but we're fully supportive of Israel. I can tell you that many non-Jews are going to come there, so were expecting the Jewish community to show up in major forces. And then, again, social media, we spoke about it. This is the time to be active on social media. This is the time, and there's tremendous resources out there. And maybe I can share some with you, and you can put them on either on the website or share it with members of Sinai. But there's different platforms where people can get information, download them, forward them, post them, and just, you know, if everyone lets their own community know what is the real story there,
yeah.
What is what is really happening there, we'll be able to spread the word, and this is very, very important.
And reaching out to our own network of friends and family, it's been so heartwarming hearing from non-Jewish friends with their support and just reaching out to them, letting them know how crucial that is.
It's true. You know, Saturday morning, the first message I had on my WhatsApp was from a non-Jewish, non-Israeli friend from Africa, who sent me a message asking me, I hope all your family is safe. I don't know if you're in Israel or not, but I'm thinking of you and I'm sending you, my warmest feelings and condolences for the people of Israel.
Well, one thing I was thinking as you were speaking is that, you know, there will be a day after, and it's incredibly important to plan our next trip. Like, even if it's just in the infancy of our mind, now is not the time, obviously. The Sinai trip next week just got canceled. But at a certain point, just to show our people that we're supporting, that we're there to help rebuild, the needs are going to be immense afterwards.
It will be immense. And you're right, it will be immense. And support is not only financial support, but also moral support and in presence and in and just, you know, reach out to your friends in Israel and family in Israel and tell them that you're thinking of them. Tell them that Temple Sinai and the Jewish community of Atlanta is doing things to support Israel. It's a strong moral boost for everyone out there. And there will be a time where we will all travel back to Israel and we'll see Israel rebuilding itself.
So speaking before we went on air, I know you've been just like me the past 3 days, utterly glued to Israeli news, American news, not taking a break for a moment, seeing those images. It's too much to bear. It's literally nauseating. How are you taking care of yourself, and what do you recommend to everyone else?
So, you know, like every good Israeli, I'm on WhatsApp, and waking up on Saturday morning, my phone screen was covered with WhatsApp messages like it has never been before. So I immediately understood that something was going on. And, you know, before I even got out of bed, I was reading the news and I understood that we are in a different world. And I took up my iPad, and I had my iPad on one Israeli news channel and then my laptop on the other one, and my phone was for WhatsApp. And that's how I spent the whole day. And I spent Sunday pretty much the whole day like this. Even the middle of the night, I woke up because I said, was there maybe something happened? Is there any news? Is there any update that I need to know? And it was like, you know, a little bit like oxygen to understand that you really want to, you know what's going on. But then I realized that it cannot go like that. So, and obviously Monday came, and work and kids, and you have to function. So I deliberately take set times of the day to watch the news and understand what's happening. And then the rest of the time I'm trying to focus on work. Doing some workout, I decide that every day I'm going to do something either going for a walk or a swim or the gym. I need to take that. And one more thing that I've been trying to do for a long time and I'm trying to do again now and I'm not very good at is to meditate. I've been trying to get into a routine of meditation regardless of what's happening now, and I think that it's even more important now just to have this break. And so, you know, these are my 2 cents on what one can do. I would also say that spoke earlier about mental health and everything that comes out on social media. We're going to see whatever Israel is posting and we are posting, which is, you know, our narrative, but we will come across some things that are posted from the other side, and some of that may be very difficult to understand and to digest. And I would urge everyone to keep their younger kids and off as much as they can social media or those platforms that where these kind of content may come through, and try to monitor and control it as much as they can, because we don't know the effect it's going to have on the children on the long run. And again, I'm not a mental health specialist, but this is just common sense for me.
No, absolutely. This is unprecedented. A final question you have. Many people in our community just can't fully grasp the enormity of what's going on in Israel now. What's the one thing you would want us all to know?
The Jewish people went through many difficulties, the pogroms, the Holocaust, wars, but we have always prevailed and we have always come back stronger. And when I see the spirit of the Jewish world, of Israelis coming together, putting all their resources, directing, channeling their anger, towards doing things, leaving all the differences that we have aside, doing things, being there one for another, seeing how we can win this, it makes me feel and understand that Israel will come stronger. You know, earlier today, President Biden spoke again, I think the second or third time since this happened, and he gave his unequivocal support to Israel. And it gives me comfort as a member or as a citizen of both the USA and Israel, or Israel and the USA, two countries that I admire, to know that we are on the right side of the moral compass, and to know that with that, we will come up stronger than this. Am Yisrael Chai.
Am Yisrael Chai. Yoav, thank you for joining us. We really appreciate it. Toda rabba lecha. As we conclude, we offer some words of prayer from the Book of Psalms. Adonai Oz Lamo Yiten, Adonai Yivorech Et Amo V'Shalom. May God grant our people and Israel strength to do what is necessary so we can live in peace. Thank you all for tuning in to Seeking Sinai, the monthly podcast of Temple Sinai in Atlanta. Depending on how things unfold, we may continue to use this platform for similar purposes in the coming weeks. As always, make yourself a part of the conversation and let us know of any pressing questions or concerns. Until then, Setchem L'Shalom. Go in peace.